You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by Casper. Head over to casper.com/brain and get $50 off your order when you use the promo code BRAIN. Go ahead, relax into a Casper mattress today.
Oh my God, that sounds great.
Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani. I am the host of this show called The Overwhelmed Brain, and I am a personal empowerment coach, and I'm here to help you increase your emotional intelligence and also strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult your physician before making any changes to your medical treatment. Thanks for joining me. I'm going to get right into it. And as you know, this is an email-driven show. A lot of the content that I talk about comes from your emails. So here's the first email that I'm going to talk about. This person writes, I don't know if you ever read emails from your listeners or answer them, but I'll give it a try. Yes, I do. Although I do prioritize my coaching emails. So if you're in the coaching program through the TOB Patron site, then you will definitely get your response quick. Anyway, she goes on to write, I have many issues, but I really need help on how to get along with my mother. I need some articles or literature that you can help me with. My mother bothers me inside more than ever, even though she lives over 100 miles away. She's always criticizing me. I've never been good enough for her. I have a big problem with self-worth, although I seem to be really strong. And I'm also afraid that I will be the same mother to my daughter as my mother is to me. That pain in me is so deep. I grew up without a father who left when I was 4 and who is still an alcoholic. We have no contact. Thank you for making the world a better place. And I'm going to call you Sonia. All right, Sonia, thank you for that. I don't know how many clients I've talked with that don't get along with one of their parents, but a good percentage of them have a problem with one of their parents or both of their parents. And, you know, that makes sense. You know, we have problems in our life today, and where do they stem? Typically from the people who took care of us, or if you could call it care. At least we're alive today and, you know, we made it through it. But there are people in our life, those caretakers, or people who were of heavy influence in our life that either helped us be more functional in the world or less functional in the world, and what I call dysfunctional. So where you are, you might have some dysfunction in you, or I'm going to guess from your letter that you do have some dysfunction in you, meaning you're less capable of being more functional in certain areas of your life because of your mother, because of your upbringing. You know, now you have the opportunity to change that as an adult. You're out of the house and you are on your own and you can make your own decisions. And this is where I want to take you. My first question is, why are you still in contact with her? I mean, if she's always criticizing you and you've never been good enough for her and you have a problem with self-worth and she pounces on that worth, why are you still in contact with her? Now, I understand she's your only mom, but she also seems to be a big source of the problem in your life. So you're an adult now. You don't necessarily need your mom. I'm skating on thin ice. I do this sometimes. And I'm not saying you have to eliminate all contact, but I will say this. If she makes you feel worthless and she's always criticizing you, then what are you getting from the relationship? Is it something ingrained in you that says, but I need a mom? And is that true? I know what I'm saying, and it's like I said, I'm really risking the idea of identity and family ties. I'm really pushing the envelope here, but why keep someone in your life that's so toxic that every time you think about them and every time you talk about them or talk with them, you feel bad? You feel worse than you did before you did talk with them. That's my question to you. If you're hoping that one day she's going to have a change of heart and apologize, and maybe she'll suddenly realize that she's been mistreating you for years, she's not. Now, that could be very presumptuous of me to say, but do you hold on to that while the relationship continues to affect you negatively? Do you hold on to the hope that she'll change or maybe apologize or maybe finally show up as the mom you've always wanted? Do you hold on to that hope while continuing to be irradiated by her toxicity? Do you hold on to it? That's a question for you. I can't answer that. You may want to, or you may want to look at it this way. What if I choose to break off contact and simply choose not to be around her? If I choose that, what happens? You know what? Try it on. Picture yourself a year from now not having had any contact with your mom. How do you feel about yourself? That might be a question that gives you a positive answer or a negative answer. Maybe you'll think, yeah, but she's my mom. And I get that. You know, we're brought up to honor our family and honor our parents. But do you have to stay in contact to honor? These are just questions. I'm just throwing them at you because you have the answers inside of you. So if you have some sort of belief that blood is thicker than, I don't know, toxic waste or radiation, if you have any sort of belief that you must hold on to your family for some reason, then you have to come to a new level of acceptance of her. And what that means is that you might have to realize that she is not capable of being the person you need her to be. And if you come to a level of acceptance in you that she is not capable of being the person that you need her to be, then maybe you can accept her for who she is. So this is a tough dilemma because now you don't have a mom. You just have someone in your life that you will choose to accept as who they are. And whatever positivity she brings in your life in any way, you can grasp onto those little tiny bits of positivity and like or love those things about her, and then just realize that the rest of her isn't capable of loving you, nurturing you, being where you want her to be. And she may not be capable of it. It may not be her fault. She just isn't capable of being the person you need to be for her. So I think these are all important questions for you to comprehend and try to figure out in yourself so that you can come to a new level with her. Either you go, you know what? She's too toxic. I don't want her in my life. Or you just say, I need to come to a new level of acceptance of her and not be so hurt when she is incapable of treating me the way I deserve to be treated. Now, here's the third aspect of this. Maybe you feel like you deserve to be treated badly. I hope that's not true. But that's what happens a lot in toxic relationships, is that you feel like you deserve bad treatment, so you stay with the toxic person. Well, I really am not good enough. I really don't deserve love because when I was 6 years old, I stole someone else's crayons and I've felt guilty ever since. You know, these little things that we these little perceptions about the world and these little belief systems that we created when we were so young. We take them into our adult world and we apply them to adult situations and adult relationships, and they don't apply. They just aren't applicable. So my thought for you is to assess the relationship you want to have. Let's just say that you want a loving, caring, nurturing mom. From what you've told me today, it's not happening, and it won't happen. You can only measure by what you see today and what you've seen up to this point. That trend, unfortunately, will continue. I say that in a presumptuous way so I don't get your hopes up, so I don't raise your perceptions to make you think that something better is down the road. If you believe it's not going to get better, this is exactly who she's going to be from this point on, you can choose to accept, or you can choose to move on. So that might be tough to swallow and implement, and maybe you can't, I don't know. It really depends on why you want this relationship in the first place. If you want a mom figure, if you need that female role model, then I would say don't use her as that role model. Don't use her as that mentor, because it doesn't sound like she would be a very good mentor to you. Which leads me to the second part of your question, which is, I'm so afraid that I will be the same mother to my daughter as my mother is to me. I totally get that. And here's the thing. You will never be the same mother to your daughter if you take your mom out of the equation. Here's what I mean. As long as you are influenced by your mom, you will trickle that influence onto your child. So unless you're able to come to an acceptance or an understanding or go completely out of contact with her, because whatever negativity you pick up from your mom, that negativity trickles onto your kid. And your child is going to learn what is acceptable behavior. So if she witnesses your mom treating you the way she does, then your child's going to go, oh, so that's acceptable. That's okay. And if in your interactions with your daughter, you feel any negativity because of your mom, you feel any low self-worth, you feel low self-esteem, you feel unloved, unnurtured, if you have all these needs that you're not getting from your mom because she keeps feeding it to you, then that will trickle down to your daughter. She'll pick it up. Kids are brilliant. They pick up stuff, which is why it's important for you to weed out the toxic people in your life or come to new understanding with those toxic people so that they aren't toxic to you and your children. So your question is very valid. I don't want to be the same mother I am to my daughter. I don't think you will be at all. But I do think that there are elements of your relationship with your mom that will trickle in ways that you probably haven't considered. So that's why it's important if your mom is a negative influence on you, then by proxy, she's a negative influence on your daughter. So this is why you need to eliminate the negative influence. And if that means going no contact with your mom, or just coming to a new level of understanding and acceptance of who she is and not letting it bother you anymore, then that would be very helpful. Now, how do you not let it bother you anymore? I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because it's very appropriate. When I lived with my wife in California, we were in a fourplex or a duplex, and our immediate neighbor always heard these noises coming from our place. So she was an older lady. She would knock on our door and she'd go, could you please stop these noises? You got this low sounding hum coming from over here and it's kind of driving me crazy. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, I'm thinking maybe there's a computer against the wall and the fan is humming, or maybe their refrigerator is vibrating on the floor and it's going over there. I thought, okay, maybe there's some validity to what she's saying. So my wife and I looked around and, you know, we moved the computers away from the wall. We tried to listen and feel and looking for that low-level hum, and we couldn't find it, but we did the best we could. So our neighbor comes back a few days later, and she goes, oh, could you please, please stop that hum? It's, you know, I can't sleep. It's driving me crazy. And we're like, wow, I don't know what you're talking about, but, you know, come on in. See if you can find this hum with us. And she walked around with us, and she goes, I can't hear it now, but I know it's here. Can you just do your best to eliminated. And we're like, Okay. She leaves. We cleared out one of the rooms against her bedroom wall. We took everything away from the wall. We turned off all the electronic equipment in there and only used it when we needed it. I think it was where we kept our office or our computers. But most of the time, it was off. A few days later, she shows up again. Would you please, it's driving me crazy. Would you please stop that humming? I don't know what's going on, but you have to stop it. And now we're starting to get a little frustrated. We don't know what you're talking about. We have like moved everything. We've moved everything away from the walls. We cleared out that one room. We're doing our best, and we're not sure where this is coming from. Will you please come in again and see if you can hear it? And I forget if she came in at that time or not, but again, we were unable to locate it. And I was like, you know, let me come over your house. You know, let me find out if there's something going on over there that we can't hear over here. So I did. I walked up in her upstairs bedroom, and she goes, well, it's not happening now, but of course. And I'm like, okay, well, when it happens, knock on my door and I'll come over and check it out. So, a few days later, I don't remember when, she comes over and again, I don't know what you're doing over here, but please, you have to stop it, please. And at that time, my wife answered. I don't think I was home. She told me this later. And my wife had had it. She had reached her breaking point. And she goes, that's it. You have come over here every single time and said that the problem's in our place. You're hearing this hum, and we have turned our lives upside down to accommodate you, and we found nothing. This is not coming from us. I don't know what is happening with you, but that sound is not coming from our place. I'm sorry if you hear it, but it is not anything that we're doing. We've done everything we could. And I don't know if she, like, slammed the door on her. But I do know that the lady was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And then she backed off. And then I think like the next day she brought a flower over or a plant and said, I'm so sorry. I won't bother you again. And that was like, okay, that's nice. But I have a feeling she still hears the sound. But I talked to my wife later about it. And I was like, wait, you yelled at her? What happened? You know, and she told me the story I just told you. And she goes, I was just getting sick of it. We can do nothing else. We've tried everything. I think we even like flipped the breaker and turned off all the power. You know, it sounds like it might be electronic, so we turned off all the power. And we still could hear nothing, and it still didn't satisfy her. We just turned it off for a couple hours or something, just so we could hear ourselves if there was a difference. You know, you might live in a sound for so long that you don't hear it. Well, we turned off all the power, and there was really no difference. So, but anyway, I talked to my wife. Because my wife was still mad about it. She was still upset. And I was like, okay, why are you so upset? She goes, because we've tried everything. We can't do anything else. We're trying to please her, and there's nothing we can do. And she keeps coming over and blaming us for something that we're not doing. And I was like, yeah, but why are you so upset? I mean, you're still upset about it. It's not like you got upset, and now you let it go, and she's letting it go too. And my wife stopped, and she's like, oh, I don't know. She's an idiot. I forget what she said. And I was like, okay, what else? And, you know, if you listen to my show, I'm kind of helping her express herself. What else are you angry about? What else are you upset about? What else about her are you upset about? And she shared that stuff with me. And so I was like, well, you know, this is our neighbor. Is there any way we can get along with her? And she's like, I don't know. I just don't know. And I said the plant didn't help. And she goes, no. And I was like, okay. Let me try to reframe this a little bit and see if it helps. I said, okay, what if our neighbor had a mental challenge? And, you know, she's probably a senior citizen. Not anything wrong with that. But maybe as she's getting older, she is losing some of her faculties. Maybe she's not understanding. Maybe she's perceiving things differently. Maybe she does have a mental disability of some sort. I said, would that make you feel any different? And she thought about it, and she's like, yes, it would. And I was like, okay. So I said, well, maybe if you were to perceive her as someone with a mental disability, how would that make you feel different, and how would that allow you to treat her differently? I said something like that. And she goes, well, I would probably treat her better. And I said, why? And she said, because I would know that she didn't necessarily have control of what's going on in her mind. I was like, okay, does that make you feel better? You know, thinking that she has this mental disability and that she's hearing these noises and it's not necessarily reality, it's her imagined reality or whatever it is. She goes, yeah, actually, it makes me feel better if I treated her as if she had a mental disability. So I said, if she comes over and knocks again, it will be just the words of someone that hears things, the hallucinates sound. And would you still be upset by that? And she goes, well, it would bug me a little bit, but I certainly wouldn't be angry at that person. I was like, great. And that's my point. That's my point. And that's what she did do. She started treating her better, and we all got along. We never found the source of the hum. Fortunately, a few months later, we moved out. So whoever moved in had to deal with that. And we got along, though. It was great. And it really helped my wife reframe this person and treat her differently. And this is what we can do in our own lives. Even if we know someone has the faculties and the control and the willpower and all this other stuff to be a certain way, it's so much easier when we can't change them and we know not to expect anything else from them to just go, well, they must be disabled in some way. They must be mentally challenged in some way. And if that's the case, how do I view them then? Like, you wouldn't go up to a person with Tourette's and say, stop swearing at me. I mean, you might, but it would be pointless. Stop swearing at me. And, you know, they might tick and swear, or they might call you a bad name. It might be a little frustrating for you to hear it, but if you knew they had an uncontrollable condition, they had no control over it whatsoever, would you still be upset with that person? It has to minimize it, unless you have no compassion whatsoever. If you have no compassion whatsoever, or you've reached your peak and there's just nothing else in you to accept that behavior, then you may not be able to do it. But for the most part, if we can perceive someone else that is bothering us in a way that helps us come to a place of acceptance, then we are in a better place in ourselves to not be bothered. So this might be helpful for you, Sonia, to see your mom as someone who has her limitations and will absolutely do whatever it takes to make you feel bad because it's how her brain operates. It still doesn't feel good because you have a history with your mom, but you might have to see it as an incapacity, something that she's just not capable of doing. And if that's the case, then you can't blame her for being any more or any less than what she is at this moment in time. You can't change her, you can't expect any changes, and you know what you'll always expect. And that's kind of freeing. It's kind of freeing to know what to expect from someone. I know this person's going to make fun of me, I know this person's going to put me down, I'm just going to expect it to happen. And once we get through that part, then we can have a nice conversation, if you want. Personally, if one of my family members made me feel bad, I would have to step away and not be in touch with them. Just like my stepfather, I'm not in touch with him. I make no efforts to contact him. My father is no longer alive, and I don't look to my stepfather to be a fatherly mentor. I look to other mentors. I become my own mentor. I become the father I never had. I become the mother I never had, you know, in certain ways. I become the brother and the sister and my best friend that I need at certain times. And that's how you build your own self-worth and self-esteem and strength and everything that you feel might be missing in your life. It's not as easy doing it yourself, and it certainly hurts to lose some people that you've loved in your life in a way, but sometimes it's necessary to start healing from how the relationship has been and what it has done to you. So I hope that helps, Sonia. Thank you so much for writing. We'll be right back after this. Well, last week I was telling you how we need a new mattress and that I was going to look at Casper to provide a solution. Well, I've been on their site and I've been looking at possibilities. Let me rephrase that. Probabilities. They have two that I'm just enamored by. The award-winning Casper and the new Casper Wave. I was like, what's this Casper Wave? I don't remember seeing this before. They call it their most innovative mattress with targeted support for the best sleep humanly possible. I had to know more. So I clicked on the link and I got to watch a very cool video. It shows their design process. I never realized how much engineering goes into their mattress design, and I have a whole new respect for their company and their product. You should check it out. Visit casper.com/brain and see what they have to offer you. If you end up purchasing, make sure to use the special promotional code BRAIN during checkout, and you get $50 off. You know, there are a few things I love about this company. They take out the middleman to eliminate those inflated prices that you'll often find at mattress stores. They have memory foam options that have just the right sink and just the right bounce, and a breathable design that sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature throughout the night. And to top it off, buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. You get to use it for 100 nights with the option of returning it without question. Not only that, if you're in the US or Canada, they'll deliver it for free and pick it up for free. If you aren't satisfied within that 100-night window, just tell them to get it. Just come and get it. But I don't see you doing that. Take a look at Casper. They want you to try before you buy because they believe you'll want to keep it once you sleep on it for the first time. I mean, we spend a third of our lives on our mattress. You might as well get one that you can't wait to lay on. Visit casper.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN when checking out to get $50 off. When you choose the Casper or the Casper Wave, I know you're going to have some amazingly relaxing nights ahead. casper.com/brain with the promo code BRAIN gets you the discount. Get your Casper today. Welcome back. All right, this next email comes from Wendy. Wendy says, I would like to let you know how grateful I am for this podcast. I am a critical thinker and traditional self-help methods don't seem to resonate with me. I'm reaching out to you in hopes that you can provide me with some guidance through my current situation. Well, thank you, Wendy. I appreciate you. I'm glad you reached out. I started dating a college classmate whom I was skeptical about. I was hesitant to date someone in my class for fear that things wouldn't work out and I would thus be uncomfortable while trying to study. I expressed these hesitations to him, but he assured me that he had the best of intentions and that our relationship was something that he really wanted. I personally felt that he was a tad pushy, and subsequent conversations indicated that he was shallow. But I overlooked those things because I liked the idea of being in a relationship, and I wanted to give him a chance. Within months, our relationship had dramatically fallen apart, leaving me angry, confused, and hurt. A few months ago, I learned that he was dating someone new and seemed to be treating her way better than he treated me. When we were together, he would rarely want to go out anywhere and was always studying. However, he was always out with his new girlfriend, taking her on dates and spending what seems like quality time with her. This makes me feel like there's something wrong with me, despite what my friends and family have told me. I'm just trying to understand why he's treating her better and what she's doing to deserve better treatment from him than I did. To make things worse, I'm constantly running into them together in places like the grocery store, restaurant, or church. Because we have mutual friends, my friends may casually bring up their relationship, which further deepens the knife and hinders my healing. I just feel like I'm being smothered and I can't get any distance. I do not have the option of transferring schools as this is not feasible with my graduate program. I guess my question is, what do I need to do to properly heal from this, given that I cannot physically distance myself from it without cutting off my friendships and otherwise severely limiting myself? Thank you so much. I look forward to your insight. Okay, Wendy, thank you so much for sharing that. And the love and loss game is a challenge. It's hard on the heart. I totally get it. So thank you for sharing that. That's a tough situation. So let me share with you at least two important points that I can think of. The first He is, you said he was pushy and shallow, but you like the idea of a relationship. So what you're saying is that you knew these things about him and still chose to be with him. What I call this is dishonoring yourself. You know, don't take too much offense to that, but when someone reveals who they are to you, or you figure that out, especially at the beginning, this is your opportunity to go, okay, do I want this type of person in my life? Do I want a pushy person? Do I want a shallow person? Because I guarantee you, if you allow what you want, like to be in a relationship, to override what's been revealed to you that you don't like, it will always fall apart. That's what they say. They say love blinds. Well, if you want a relationship and you override your thoughts and feelings and intuitions about what you don't like, it will fall apart or it will get worse. Typically, that's what happens. So I just want you to keep that in mind. Also, if you like the idea of a relationship, but you don't qualify it with what kind of relationship, you'll be stuck with whatever comes your way. So I want you to become super clear on what you want in a partner, and especially don't settle. Settling is what happens when you refuse to wait for something better. Settling is what my girlfriend did for many years. She settled for guys that were good enough, and they turned out, some of them turned out to be emotionally abusive or toxic in some way or something else. And she ended up very unhappy in these relationships. So she had to get out of those relationships. It wasn't until when she got married and got into another relationship after her marriage ended, where she realized, all I do is attract these awful people in my life. So she made her list of the perfect partner. I want this. I want this. I want this. I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want that. And she put it on paper and she said, I refuse to settle for anything less than this. If that means I'm single for the rest of my life, that's what it means. Boy, when you commit to that, you're going to get what you want. If I had committed to that crappy job I had when I was married and my wife and I were homeless and jobless, and I got this crappy job, I hated it, couldn't wait to get out of it, felt like a prisoner at my cubicle, but I chose to quit because it was so awful. It was belittling to me. It was it stifled me in so many ways. If I had chose to commit to that, I never would have found the other job that paid me double and paid me to travel. It was just night and day. I chose not to settle. And that was what I needed most. I needed a job. I needed income. But I decided not to settle. When you settle, you take what you get, and what you get may be the most unhappiest times in your life. That's what happens when you settle. You become unhappy. I'm not saying always. I'm saying it happens often. So you really need to consider what it means to settle. If you could have the happiest, most wonderful relationship in 10 years, would you be okay being single until that point? That might be a hell no. I don't know. But let's just say that you absolutely knew in 10 years you would meet the partner of your dreams and they would have absolutely everything you wanted and you had the most ultimate, abundant, happy life with that person. Knowing that's going to happen in 10 years, would you be single for 10 years until that happened? Now the thought comes up, well, can I date? Absolutely. But don't settle. That's my point. It doesn't mean it's going to happen in 10 years. It could happen next month. But when you settle for something less than you deserve, you usually become unhappy. You usually invite unhappiness into your life. So remember, settling is what you do when you refuse to wait for something better. And a relationship based on what you settle for usually doesn't last. Now, my second point is very important. If that wasn't important enough for you, this is it. It's along the same lines of the pushy and the shallow. You said he's now in a relationship with someone else. Now maybe, just maybe, he prefers the pushy and shallow type. And as a couple, they are more compatible than you two were. Just imagine that for a moment. Let's just say that he met someone pushy and shallow like him, and it turned him on. it was like, wow, this is so much different than Wendy. Wendy wasn't pushy and shallow at all. She was kind and nice and passive and compassionate. I don't want that. I want a pushy woman. I want somebody who's shallow, who can look at my body and go, yes, that's what I want. I want that body and not the mind. Or whatever shallow means to you. Maybe he met someone that appreciates those qualities. Now, that may hurt to hear, but I want you to consider this. I was with a woman for 13 years. When our relationship ended, she found a guy that spoke his mind, wasn't afraid to be himself. He was a little rough around the edges, and he didn't really put on a show for anyone. He just showed up as himself. Now, can you guess who I was and how I showed up for that entire 13 years that we were together? I showed up as the person I believed she wanted to see. I was the complete opposite of the person she ended up with. I was someone who never showed negative emotions. I only and always ever showed my good side, if you can call it that. I always kept the peace, and I always made sure that her family and friends thought I was the best catch ever. I never showed her or anyone else the full breadth of my personality. I never stepped into myself and revealed anything other than what I believed would be best for her and everyone else to be exposed to. After all, what would she think if she saw the real me? And that's what I want to emphasize. Do you want someone to be with you for the you that you have to become, or the you that you are? Do you want someone to share your life with someone that you aren't compatible with? I'm not saying that you have to become pushy and shallow to get back with this guy, although maybe he would like that. But if that's not who you are, that game is not going to last long. That's going to wear you down. It's going to burn you out. So don't change yourself to be someone that he likes. I'm not saying you said that. I'm just saying that this is what I did. When my girlfriend ended up with a guy that was totally opposite of me, and I saw that she was having a good time and she even got married to that guy, I was like, what? What about me? What does that say about me? It says a lot. It says that the person I was could never be what she was looking for in a guy. And if I wanted to get her back, it's possible that if I started acting like him, I could probably get her back. But now I have to be someone that I'm not, or at least I didn't feel like I was at that time. And yay, maybe I get her back. And then it doesn't work out. And now I've ruined her relationship with him. And I've ruined my relationship with myself because I'm not showing up as who I want to be, as who I felt like I was. I had to work on myself, of course, over the years and figure out who I was. But even now I look at myself and go, hey, you know what? I am sort of like that guy, but I didn't show up in the relationship like that, so she would never see that part of me. And I'm not sort of like that guy in a lot of ways, too, so she probably wouldn't have appreciated it anyway. Who knows? It doesn't matter. What I'm trying to say is that the personality quirks and characteristics in someone else, the nuances, are sometimes more compatible and they're sometimes less compatible with the people that we want in our life. And so if he is looking for someone that appreciates someone shallow, or wants to be pushed around or dominated, and that's not you, then you don't want this guy in your life. I can almost guarantee it, unless you are already that way, unless you already want those things in a relationship. So you may want a relationship, but do you want one with someone pushy and shallow, or other things that maybe you didn't tell me about? That's that settling thing. If you don't want it, don't settle. So I wanted to emphasize those two points before answering the real question, which I'll do now. You asked, what do I need to do to properly heal from this, given that I cannot physically distance myself from it without cutting off my friendships and otherwise severely limiting myself? My answer is sort of basic, but I will expound on it a little bit. Proper healing involves time. It always involves time. Now, that's proper healing. That is the methodical day-by-day, time heals every wound kind of healing. I'm not saying time heals every wound, but that's the cliche. So yes, proper healing takes time. Accelerated healing involves acceptance of loss. The fastest healing involves knowing that your life would have sucked worse with him than without him. But it's almost impossible to fast forward the healing from a heartbreak. In fact, the end of a relationship I like to treat as I would a death. Like there's a death in my life. There's a death of someone I really love. And that death forces me to accept that they're gone forever. When I can come to that acceptance that they're gone forever and there's no hope I'll ever see them again, touch them again, feel them again, hear them again, then my healing comes faster. It hurts worse, but it comes faster. And the great part about that is if they're not dead, then when I heal, I will be able to see them from a new perception, from a new perspective. And it's very helpful to have that new perspective because I've given myself time to heal. When they're still around, yes, it's harder. When you keep running into them, yes, it's harder. I totally get that. But let me repeat my answer. Proper healing involves time. Accelerated healing involves acceptance of loss. The fastest healing involves knowing that your life would have been worse with him than without him. And really, when it comes down to it, you can't fast forward the healing of a heartbreak. Your investment in the relationship was an investment in you. The relationship was a part of you. And a part of you, I hate to say it, died that day. This is why I say treat it as a death. The ending of the relationship left you unfulfilled and only partially whole. And there is an empty space where you feel there should be love and nurturing. This is why when you have this emptiness inside of you, it's time to rebuild. And one of the best ways to rebuild is to accept that there is an emptiness inside of you, that there is a loss, and that that person is lost in your life, is not coming back. And you rebuild who you are by accepting the loss of love as a death. This is challenging to say, let alone hear, but it does help with the healing process. And as you heal, be with yourself in nature or wherever you feel comfortable to reconnect with who you are inside. For example, I went to Maynard, Massachusetts once, and I grew up there. I had a childhood there. And I was in my 30s, and I was going through some sort of midlife crisis. It might have been after my breakdown at 35 or so, I forget. And I just went by myself. I went for a couple days. I wanted to visit my hometown and experience it once again from an adult perspective. I wanted to connect with who I was at that time and really get to know myself from this new place in this old place. I was in a new place in myself in this old town that I grew up in. And I tell you what, it's really strange when you go through your old hometown because the mile that you walked as a child is like 300 feet as an adult. It's just like your steps are longer and it takes no time at all to get to where you're going. But as a child, I used to walk around town all the time. And I remember, you know, going up and down my streets and visiting the bowling alley and going to the donut shop and walking farther than a child should ever be allowed to walk because I just loved walking and getting away from home. You know, the alcoholic, abusive person that lived at home, I didn't want to be there. I just wanted to get out. So I'd walk and walk and walk. So I wanted to revisit this town and try to reconnect, I don't know what it was, fill in the gap in my life, fill in that empty space that I felt was missing. I thought maybe if I could reconnect with myself as this adult, that there would be some conduit across time between my child self and my adult self. So I took this little journey, and when I arrived, I found this awful hotel room. It was awful, but it was a place to sleep. And, you know, I was able to park there and I was able to put my stuff in there and then go off into town. And that's what I did. I walked through town like I did as a child. I got to see my old elementary school, which is all boarded up. It was kind of cool, actually, because it looked like a ghost town, or at least that school did. And I got to see where the old bowling alley was, which turned into an office building. And I even went down the street that I lived on when I was a very young child. And the next thing that happened was something that I don't know if I would call a spiritual awakening, an enlightening moment, an opportunity to heal within something that I've been holding on to, But as I was walking down the street that I grew up on, I ended up going to the house that I remembered living in, and there was a couple working outside. They were working on their garden or their hedges or something. And I saw them, and I went up to them, and I was like, hey, you know, I said, hi. And they said, oh, hi, how are you doing? And they were so friendly. And I didn't know who they were. I don't know who moved into our house many years after. But I said, you know, I used to live here, and I just wanted to walk down this road and see what it looks like and, you know, connect with it again. I forget what I said. And they go, really? And I was like, yeah, and this is really cool to see that you're taking care of it. And he goes, why don't you come on inside? And I was like, really? And he goes, yeah, come on inside. And they stopped what they were doing, the man and woman, husband and wife, I guess. And they brought me inside. And I went through the kitchen I used to eat in. And I saw the living room that I used to watch TV in. And I saw that they'd removed a wall. And I saw how the house was painted. And it was all bright. And how much smaller it looked as an adult. And I just got this rush of, I don't know what you'd call it, emotion, energy. I was inside the house I grew up in. And it was a magical moment. And then I remembered, oh my God, this is the spot that my stepfather abused me. He held me down and he rubbed my dirty underwear in my face when I was 4 years old. And I was like thinking in my head, this is the spot he abused me, right here. And I realized, this is it. This is that conduit. This is that connection to my childhood that I needed to reconnect with. This is that missing piece in my heart. This is that emptiness I feel right here. And I have an opportunity to heal it right now. And I reached up and I could touch the ceiling. You know, I'm 6'4". I can reach pretty high. That was a low ceiling anyway. But I was able to reach up just to connect with the house and really connect with that younger version of myself and complete the circuit, you know, close the loop and be there and, you know, come to terms with this and come to peace with it. And as they were talking to me, I just looked down at the floor where it happened and realized this is it. This is where I get to heal. Whatever happened, happened inside of me, some shift, some enlightenment. I don't know what it was. I started talking with them again and, you know, I didn't tell them about the abuse or anything like that, but it was just an amazing moment in my life to be able to revisit the house from this adult perspective, knowing there was something missing in my life and having the opportunity to connect with that child inside of me, that inner child, in a way that I've never done before. And that couple just being so nice and inviting a perfect stranger in their house, making me feel welcome, as if they knew it was okay to let me in. I don't know if that's guidance. I don't know if that's God. I don't know if what's going on there, but they invited me in without issue. And we talked for quite a few minutes and I left. And I got back in my car and I think I drove to some park or some woods in Marlboro or Sudbury, somewhere else that I visited in Massachusetts. And I walked through the woods and reconnected with myself in a way I had never done before. And I just started crying. It just came out of nowhere. I don't even know what I was crying about. But something happened to me that day. Something shifted. Something changed in me. And I was able to heal fully from what happened in my past. And after my 2 days in Maynard were done, I got back in my truck and drove back home. That was when I was living in Florida. And I learned that this is what you need to do when you are suffering from loss. It's not a matter of trying to reconnect with the other person. It's a matter of reconnecting with yourself. What is lost in you that you need to regain? What is empty in you that you need to rebuild, that you need to fill with something, with a part of you? That's what happens is when you're in a relationship, you feel like a part of you has been removed. So you need to reconnect with that you. I don't know if you need to go on a Mecca and visit your hometown. I don't know what kind of enlightenment or journey that you may need to take. But I really believe in reconnecting with yourself in nature in a way that no one else is around and The only person you have to reach out to is you. That's what it felt like for me that day. I reached out to myself, to my four-year-old self that day, like a conduit through time, and was able to connect with him and absolve whatever was missing. And doing that can change your life. When we come back, I'm going to answer the last part of your email right after this. All right, welcome back. We're going to talk about the last part of your email, Wendy, that said you commented on him being out on dates with his new girlfriend and spending quality time together. And it's a blow to you because you think you're not good enough for him. The problem isn't that at all. This has nothing to do with you being good enough. In fact, think about this. Let's just say that you were his ideal partner in every way. But he did one thing that really bothered you. Let's just say that he invalidated your emotions and you didn't like it at all. You felt worthless. You felt unimportant. If he did that often, do you think it would be best to stay in a relationship with him? What if he forced you to do things that you didn't like and he wouldn't take no for an answer? Do you think it's better to stay in that relationship or get out? Now, the reason I'm telling you this is something that you said. You said, the relationship went downhill fast. There's a reason for that. And I'm going to guess that one of the reasons is that your values weren't in alignment at all. Maybe he wanted someone more compliant. And like I already said, maybe he wanted someone more shallow, like him. Maybe he wanted someone who didn't mind being bossed around and doing exactly what he asked. As I said in the previous segment, if you really want to keep a relationship like that, then you need to change who you are and become more compliant and more submissive and do things that you don't want to do just to keep someone that is bad for you. You're reading between the lines here, right? I'm being a little sarcastic, but of course they're having a good time. She may prefer to be pushed around and told what to do. If that isn't you, don't make it you. She may prefer a shallow, maybe even less intelligent guy. If that isn't you, don't make it you. You will only always ever get exactly the right person if you don't change who you are for them. If they find someone else, it is a bullet thankfully dodged, because imagine if you were even more invested and they were too afraid to leave you because they didn't want to hurt you. Then you're in a phony relationship with someone you're heavily invested in and making plans for a future that probably won't exist, or at least will fail at some level. So what I'm saying is that when you see them out together, I want you to see her exactly how you see him and know that maybe they are right for each other. Maybe all of his bad qualities she is receptive to and you aren't. Like I said, I don't want you to change you and become more compliant and submissive to do the things that you don't want to do just to keep someone that is bad for you. If you do that, then you will become unhappy. How can I get the person of my dreams? I'll change me and then they'll be attracted to me and then I'll be sick of being this new me because that's not me at all. That's not how it works. You show up as you so you can get the right person for you. When that person's not the right person, they end up with someone else who might become the right person for them. And their qualities complement his qualities. But I'm not saying that all the good qualities complement all the good qualities, because all the bad qualities do too. So whatever bad qualities you see in him, if she accepts that in her life, then she is built differently than you. Then she may be in a situation that maybe she likes or doesn't like. But now you are no longer exposed to those bad qualities, and she is. And you can look at that any way you want. Maybe she needs to learn some lessons in her life. Maybe she appreciates whatever those qualities are. But can you understand that's why they may be more compatible? It's like if you're not a smoker or a drinker and you meet a smoker and a drinker, you're probably going to go out less because they want to smoke and drink and you don't. They're probably going to want to go out and smoke and drink and party it up, whatever smokers and drinkers do, no judgments here. And they'll just do what they want to do, where they want to do it, but as long as smoking and drinking is involved. But you don't want to go to those places. Do you think that you'll go out less often? The answer is yes, you will go out less often. Now, they realize that you're not outgoing and as gregarious as they are and extroverted as they are. So they decide to stay home more often, not being who they want to be. And they realize it's not working out for them. I'm not saying that this is what your ex did. I'm saying that when you meet someone that has characteristics that you don't like or aren't compatible with, they're going to meet someone that has characteristics that are compatible, and they're going to get along in a different way, and they're going to do different things. So if your ex was a smoker and a drinker and you weren't, and they met a smoker and a drinker, they'll probably go out a lot more because there's no incompatibilities. But would you convert to smoking and drinking just to be with him more? Hopefully not. Again, I'm not judging smoking and drinking. I'm more of a judge of changing who you are for someone else. I don't want that to happen. I don't want you to change who you are for someone else. I want someone to accept you and want to be with you for who you are. And if the person that is with you doesn't want to be with you for who you are, thank God. Let them go. Let them find someone that does appreciate them for who they are, and they appreciate the other person for who they are. Let them find the right person, because if they're not accepting you for all you are, for how you show up, then you're going to get the results that you already got. You're going to end up with something that's not good. So when you see them out and about, thank her for being compatible with him so that you didn't end up with someone that would make you unhappy. Thank her. Be thankful. I know that's hard. I know you're still healing. There's some grieving going on, and I want you to connect with yourself in any way you possibly can. But just remember that each lost relationship is not actually a loss. It's just finding out who you are more and more. It's learning that you won't settle for less, because settling is disrespecting your worth. And I want you to step into that worth, and especially be there for yourself first. The hurt of loss is like losing love when you're a child. It hurts the same way. Where's the love? I need love. I need nurturing. This is the time to nurture that child that still hurts inside of you. Hug her. Give her support. Talk to her. Connect with her in ways that you haven't before. Let her know that you're there for her. Reconnect with yourself. Thank you so much for writing, and thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I'd like to thank iTunes reviewer LW90631 for their 5-star review in iTunes. That person says, I love this podcast, especially a host who can laugh at himself. There's a lot of wisdom in these sessions. Thank you so much for that review. I appreciate that. And I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Casper. I want you to check out these mattresses. Go to casper.com/brain and use the promo code BRAIN for $50 off your mattress. And I want to tell you about the Mean Workbook. If you're in a manipulative or emotionally abusive relationship, or you don't know you're in one, or you just can't figure out what's going on in your relationship, but you tend to feel guilty or responsible for all the problems all the time, and the other person always seems like they're right and you're wrong, maybe you're being manipulated. I highly recommend you go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/mean, that's M-E-A-N, and get the Mean Workbook. I've gotten some phenomenal feedback on it, and it's quite a revealing process, and it will likely reveal things that maybe you suspected, maybe you're not aware of in your relationship. Well worth going through it. I highly recommend it if you feel at all emotionally abused, manipulated, or you just can't figure out what's going on in your relationship. Visit theoverwhelmedbrain.com/mean. And I'd like to thank the patron members for their support of this show. And of course, if you're a patron member, then you are receiving private episodes and workbooks and specific training and also email coaching. So if you want to support this show and get something in return, go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com and check it out. I appreciate all of you in the program. Thank you so much. And of course, the easiest way to support the show is to use the Amazon link at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Every time you use the Amazon link to do your shopping, we get a little percentage of each sale you make. So buy lots of stuff. theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Just click on the Amazon link before you shop. Your shopping habits are making a difference. So thank you. And finally, thank you to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And to close the show, I want to mention something that my girlfriend and I were having a conversation on just the other day. And it is on the guilt that many partners feel when they have an intuition about their partner and they refuse to follow through with that intuition. Like, I've spoken with clients that have intuitions that their partner might be doing something bad or lying or betraying or, you know, something that is not conducive to a good relationship and certainly against their commitment to each other. So my girlfriend is like, you know, when I was in my abusive relationship with my husband, I had this intuition, but I also had this guilt because I had the intuition. And I was like, what do you mean? This is interesting. I want to know more. And she is like, I had this guilt that because I was suspicious that he might be cheating on me, I felt guilty for having that intuition. I felt guilty for having those thoughts. I'm supposed to love my husband and trust my husband. I shouldn't have those thoughts. And on top of those thoughts, he would also lie to her and say, of course you can trust me. And that went against her intuition, yet she felt this guilt come up, and she chose to side with the guilt instead of her intuition. She chose to take action, or non-action, based on her guilt and not her intuition. So let me let everyone off the hook here. This is very, very important. If you have an intuition that something is not right, something doesn't feel right, and then you have guilt about thinking that about the other person, for example. Like if you have an intuition like, I think that person's lying to me. And then a guilt comes up and forces you to go, well, I'm not supposed to think that about this person, so I will just deny my intuition. I mean, wherever you go, I think that's probably somewhat accurate for some people. They just deny their intuition and realize, well, I'm supposed to trust. I don't want you to deny intuition. I don't want you to side with guilt. I don't want you to put the blindfold on and hope that your intuition is wrong. I'm not telling you what you should do. Like, I had a conversation with a client the other day, and I said, well, I'll tell you what I would do, but I'm not going to tell you what you should do. Just like I'm not going to tell you what you should do. All I know is that if you have an intuition and it's niggling at you and you feel it every day, every week, every month, there's something that's not right. The dots aren't connecting correctly. There's some sort of, I don't know, something's up and your radar is going off. The flags are going up. But then guilt kicks in and you shouldn't feel that way, and they're a nice person and then they wouldn't lie. And if that comes up and overrides your intuition, I need you to step back and go, no, I need to trust my intuition. I need to justify if it's wrong or right. What does that mean? That means that whatever causes you to go in the direction of your intuition to justify if it's wrong or right might be the path you want to take. I'm not suggesting what to do. I'm saying that intuition plays a role in your life and it needs closure. It's like an open loop. There's something open in my life and I don't have closure to it. It's like that damn TV show I saw that went 7 seasons and then it stopped mid-season on the 7th season. And now I have no idea if the world ends, if those two people fell in love, or if she went back to her old boyfriend. I have no idea what happened. There's all these open loops in my mind. It's still there. I still want closure for that stupid TV show, which I loved. But I never saw the finale. There was no finale. It was never created. They just canceled it. So now it's an open loop in my mind. It doesn't make me crazy, don't worry. But it gives you an idea of how this works. Like, What happened after that last episode? This is what intuition that doesn't go away does. It's like, I don't know what the resolve is here. I don't know what the solution is here. I don't know if it's true or not. So I'm either going to go into denial and hope that my intuition is wrong or right or whatever you're thinking about, or I'm going to follow it up and justify. Because this is what happens. As soon as you follow your intuition, you're either going to justify that it was right and now you can do something about it, or that it was wrong, which will close the loop, which will stop the, I don't know if you want to call it suffering, but it'll stop the unfinished thought. You will feel more complete. You will feel more whole. And until that happens, you don't feel whole. You feel like there's just something not right. So my thought is to go with the intuition and do what you can to prove yourself right, or do what you can to prove yourself wrong. That way you can close the loop. I hate open loops. They stick in my mind and you can't get rid of them. And how do I get rid of them? I have to follow up on them. How can you get rid of them? Open your mind. Step into your power. Be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.